it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Oi, oi! I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Venus. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
Let me introduce your hosts.
Some things need discussing. Don't mistake being a sap for just being a realist.
No man has played for England more times than Ben Youngs.
If you're having mince / bolognese before the game, you don't want to splash it on your nice, clean white top.
Ah. Oh. Dan Cole. With his 100 caps, all his medals, his cuddly cute face and his beautifully shiny head.
For the love of rugby.
Enjoy.
Coley, we're back, but my God, how hard are the Easter holidays? Like, do you ever just go to Bell, like, I just need to go out to the club. Isn't it your day off? No, I just need to pop in and then just drive and just drive. And then return a couple of hours later.
It's like the whole thing is like Easter holidays, oh, it's going to be great to have some time. And then it's like more stressful with children at home than it is normal life. Because you're kind of like, oh, it's great at home. And then you're like, oh, maybe we should do something. Maybe like in your head, you're like, you've got to have something constantly on the go with kids. Like, you know, take them to soft play, take them outside. Take them outside, give them some fresh air. But like, you know what I mean? Like you constantly want to entertain them. But then you think like back to my childhood. And I was like, I did fuck all in the holidays. Like, I was literally just at home by myself. Well, I won't say myself. My mum was there, like me and my sister. And it was like, we didn't go anywhere. You know, we weren't taking them. I've had the occasional day trip, but like, it wasn't like an action-packed schedule of doing stuff. So I'm taking that route, that approach to the kids now. It's like, if you're bored, it's good for you. So learn how to entertain yourselves.
No, mate, as a kid, like a day out was basically, you can go for a walk around the woodlands. Yeah, the kids have it easy these days. But do you know what the other thing as well? Everyone's like, oh, so what are you doing for Easter? Are you going away or anything like that? And you're like, no, I can't just request some time off. I can't, you know, just go to the boss. It's Easter holidays and I really would quite like to get away with the family. So can I have it off, please? I've always wanted to go skiing this time of year or something like that. But no, can't do it.
Well, so this is, I think, the first family holiday abroad, like since before COVID. And no, it's not really like too exceptional, but it's just like summer holiday. Even like when we finish in the off season, sometimes you finish in May to like June. And the kids are still at school, so you don't want to take them out of school, and this is this. So it's like, yeah, it's like you go to the school, and it's like, oh, we're going to race for Easter at the weekend. What are you doing? It's like, working. Yeah. I'm not moaning about being a rugby player, but your schedule's slightly adrift to everyone else, isn't it?
It is. You're so dictated to by the season, and you can't just go, yes, I'm going to have that off. It's like bank holidays, isn't it?
Oh, the only reason I know it's bank holidays is when you drive in and you're like, where the fuck is everyone?
Yeah.
It's like, your commute takes, like, your commute's down from like 25 minutes to like 10, and you're like, ah, oh, right, yes.
Oh, so true, isn't it? It's so true. Although, you know, the bank holidays here, you obviously get Medbourne versus Hallerton, which is a bit of a tradition, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, bottle kicking. That's a local thing that happens every Easter. Two villages go against each other. Though it's a bit of a fix because they have to haul these kegs down a hill, and Hallerton's hill is, I reckon, 250 metres. I reckon Medbourne's 3 miles away. There's a bit of grapple at the top of this hill, and it's like, oh, it's rolling down the hill to Hallerton. Oh, they've won. Oh, they've won again. And, oh, let's just get on the piss, everyone. So that's what happens. Like,
it's actually genius, isn't it? Because it's essentially like a massive mall bundle, and I've been there a few times. I haven't participated in it, but it's actually excellent. And then all of a sudden someone will shout, stop, stop, stop. Everyone will stop. Some bloke will be like sort of crawling out with an injury. St John's ambulance scoops him up.
Have you not thought when you look at it, Ben, that it's like, God, look at these idiots all scrapping to get a keg
I know.
Over a line. And it's like,
That's what,
who's the idiot? Like,
that's all we've ever done. We've
spent entire careers just mauling a ball over a line, mate. It's like, I'm laughing at this village game thinking, ugh. And then I'm just like, no, I'm the idiot.
That's so true. Because whenever, you know, like you hear about the cheese rolling in Gloucestershire? Is it Gloucestershire they do that?
It's a tradition,
there's lots of different other, although I think that's been changed, but there's lots of old traditions in villages and stuff. And this one here, when I tell like the foreign lads come over and I say, oh, there's bottle kicking and Medbourne versus Hallerton, and it's like a massive maul. You're right, Cole. We all look and think, oh God, what a load of it. Like, how crazy is that? That's such a like stupid old tradition, but great. And it's like, oh no, that's literally what we get paid to do.
And literally it's like, stop, when someone gets injured, stop. Let's just move it slightly to the side and carry on.
It's very much the Cocker's approach when it comes to training. If someone happened to be, was it who one of the lads literally, well, he broke his leg, didn't he? It was actually horrendous. And Cocker's just moved them all about 5 metres away and then said, right, carry on.
It was just like, stop, medic, physio, yep. Looked at it, then it was like, right, we'll just pick up these cones and move them slightly further over here and we'll do it again. So that's Easter, mate.
Yeah, well, it is, isn't it? Right, let's get into it, shall we?
Yes.
We have a question from Breezy. What were your first impressions of each other? Well, I knew you before you knew me, because I watched, obviously, my brother play England 18s, and Coley was the same size at 18 as he is now, and he had a mane of hair, this big nest of hair on his head, this huge tight head walking around. I remember just being like, oh my God, who is that? And my dad was like, oh, Stan Cole, he's at Leicester with Tom. And that was the first time I set eyes on the Cola Bear.
Yeah, you say huge. I was probably about the same weight, but I was morbidly obese at the time.
Look massive. You were massive at 18.
Well, literally, we got like, I remember coming to the academy at Leicester and it was like, right, front five, we got to just like eat. And we used to have this protein drink that was like, it was Mass Factor, but basically we lads used to call it Ass Factor, and it was literally I think like about 30 grams of protein, about 400 of carbs. So everyone's like, putting on mass, and it's like, I can't walk upstairs without being out of breath. And it's like, yeah, you've done us really well here. It served us all right in the long run though, but yeah, there was a period in time when it was just literally like, guys, you gotta be 18 and gotta be ready for the first team, so yeah, get big. Oh yeah, we got big. I remember going to Pizza Buffet once. And like, we were encouraged, we did this weightlifting block where you had to do, I can't remember what it was. It was like, I think you worked up to your maximal lift in like, you had to do six maximal lifts, but across the entire day. So we had a 2 week period. So we used to do it 6 days, had a day off 6 days, but it was like, you just need to get the calories in, you get the calories in. So every day we used to go to Pizza Buffet in Leicester, and there's 3 hours in the middle of the day, and just have like 20 slices of pizza and come back like bloated, lifting. It's like, oh yeah, you're getting really strong. Then we played a game. We did this for 2 weeks. We were supposed to like super compensate. We played a game 10 days after it. None of us could move. And it was just like, yeah, don't think that's work, lads. Cool.
Well, that explains why the first time I saw you, you were incredibly big compared to everyone else.
Yeah.
And then I suppose when we met, we just got to know each other. You're quite a quiet guy when you were younger. Really, I got to know you through my brother, really. That's who really how I got to know you.
First time I met you, I passed my driving test and I had a green Ford car and I was driving. Tom had invited me for a few days. Tom, your brother, invited me a few days to stay at your house in Norfolk and just see the farm, because obviously you spoke about the farm a lot, and I was just summer holiday. So I remember driving across and my one arm out the window because I had no air conditioning, and that arm got thoroughly burnt.
I do remember that, actually.
So I turned up with one burnt arm and one not so burnt. And then, yeah, and I first met you. You were running around the house in, I swear it was a Toulouse shirt you had, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you're running the house. Yeah, and that was the first time I met you. And I stayed with you for a couple of days. And then, I say, worked on the farm. I subsoiled, which was like, there's a field over there that needs not even ploughing, subsoiling, just fuck off for a few hours. And I thought, it's not too hard, but trying to drive a straight line into a field, it's an art, mate, and I never achieved it. So
it is an art, Coley. It is an art. I haven't achieved that art yet. I will one day. But as far as my farming goes, it's potato grading, wild oat pulling, or topping. So maybe I won't ever have a shot at that. One thing I'll say, you know, when you say you drove across to Norfolk, I remember Fraser Balmaid and Boris Stankovic came over to Norfolk it was again during our time off, and they wanted to come over, and we were going to get set into a couple of pubs along the coast there. they had a McDonald's before they left, but they weren't allowed any drink with it or any water because they wanted that first pint to taste so good. So the time they got to the pub, it had taken like 3 hours. Stanko, obviously, and Fraser can put it away, had had like a ridiculous amount of McDonald's with no drink to wash it down, weren't allowed any. So the time they got to the pub, that first pint made taste so good for them. But yeah, that was, so yeah, there you are, Breezy. That's our first time impressions and how we got sort of to know each other.
Yep. We have a question from Steve. Why is Ben called Lenny?
Steve, I wish I had a really good story. And had I known this was coming up, I could have maybe fabricated one and it could have been awesome, but I don't. I am one of 28 cousins. My granny and grandfather had 6 girls and my mum's the last. They had 6 girls, bless him, because he wanted to keep the family name, got to 6 girls and threw in the towel. How he got to 6 and threw in the towel, I don't know. I think a lot of people would have probably done that earlier. But I'm one of 28 cousins. I'm the second youngest on that side. And everyone has a nickname. And mine is Benny Lenny. And it just stuck. So it's either Lenny or Lendred tends to be what people call me. No one calls me Ben, do they, Cotley?
Not really. I thought it was because you had an imaginary friend called Lendred. He used to go around everywhere with you.
You did try and start this rumour up. A few lads tried to start this rumour that I had an imaginary friend called Lenny or Lendred. And they used to follow me and I'd push a swing with no one on it and all this weird sort of stuff. And that's just absolute bollocks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah, of course it is.
Have you got 2 drinks there, mate? Have you got one for you and one for... Oh, right, yeah, yeah. What's that empty chair doing next to you, mate? Oh, right, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's called Lenny.
Yeah, trust me, Steve. There's a lot worse nicknames out there. And I'll take Lenny or Lendred.
There's a question from Carol. What hobbies do you have outside of rugby? Well, that's the answer then.
trying to think.
Do you play golf?
I say I play golf, but I don't because I have 3 kids and I actually signed up a membership, right? Paid my membership fee for a year. And then my 3rd child, Etty, arrived. And I paid the fee in like the end of August and Etty was born in September. And I didn't get out once. I basically donated to a golf club.
What a great organisation to donate to as well.
What a great cause. So hobbies-wise, I would say I play golf, but I'm a fair-weather player. And I can't say I'm really a player because I don't play particularly well, but I have a good time playing golf. Hobbies, to be fair, life revolves around the children, to be fair, outside of rugby. So I'm essentially a taxi driver.
Yeah, no, I would say similar in my behalf. If Carol was interested, I have interest in like sort of like American football and sort of reading and that kind of stuff, but that's not really a hobby. But it's kind of something you can just pick up whilst in between school runs or come after training and between cooking dinner and putting kids to bed. But yeah, I don't have anything where I can disappear out for 5. I'd love to have somewhere I could disappear out 5 hours, but I don't think Bell would allow me to. Just done 8 weeks away, the Six Nations, wherever it was, and you come back and it's like, right, I'm just going to go golfing or fishing for a day. No, you're not. You're looking after the kids. So, yes, I am.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that we definitely have a lot of interests, but we don't necessarily have hobbies.
Hobbies, probably cutting the grass is probably a hobby, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Does that count?
School run, does that count? That's a hobby. Taking them to clubs, hobby.
Putting the bins out. Yeah, loads of cool hobbies, really cool hobbies.
Filling up the car fuel, making a coffee in the morning.
Watching the TV, not being in control of the TV, but watching what the kids or the wife has put on TV. That's another hobby of mine.
Watching a bit of Netflix, hobby. Washing up,
yeah.
Hobby. So yeah, there you are, Carol. I've got plenty of hobbies, turns out.
Yeah.
Question from Dickinson. How would Ben's teammates describe Ben?
Well, how would your teammates describe you? It would depend on, I would say, whether you're going to split the rugby player and the person. So it's 2 different things. Like rugby, everyone would go like, oh, professional, great teammate, fat, all that kind of stuff. no, I think they'd say you, I take that back. No, they'd say you're energetic and that you bring life to stuff and well, you're a great teammate, but like you're like one of those people that connects the squad and not people person, sounds a bit mean, but you know what I mean, like you can connect with everyone in the squad, bring energy. We also probably realize that when you're sad, you're quieter than you normally are, you know what I mean? You're one of those people that is, you can,
if I'm high, I'm coming in red hot,
yeah,
but if I'm low, I'm not bringing much, and it's a big, there's a really big drop off.
Yeah,
it's really noticeable. So like if I'm quiet, lads are like, you're right, Lenny, is everything all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, mate. Of course I'm fine. What's your problem? Just how I'm made up, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I like how it said, how would your teammates describe you, Ben? But we're actually only just asking you, so I'm happy with that answer. Let's just do that. We don't need to ask anyone else.
Do you want me to take a poll? Do you want me to send a text out to some people?
Yeah, yeah. Let's just see what else people have got to say. There's a follow-up question on this. You see it?
Is there?
How would Ben's opponent describe Ben? Triple R bastard. That's definitely being said.
Yeah, probably. That's probably how they just describe you.
Jackal threat, tackling threat.
Physical presence.
Dominate the collision. Leave some ribs on the floor. An enforcer when it comes to being physical part of the game.
There's a question from Ben. What did you sacrifice when growing up to make it as a pro?
Anything academic.
Nice. Really took you away from your studies, did it, rugby?
Yeah, I just felt like I could have, you know, achieved more in the classroom. But, you know, that just wasn't my priority. I just put all my eggs in one basket, which had been trying to be a professional rugby player. And, you know, I just chose to be bottom of the class in all 12 subjects. So yeah, that was a choice. I chose a different route.
And a serious question from Ben.
Yeah, like, should we try and answer it seriously?
No, because, mate, well, we can do it both, yeah. What you sacrificed growing up? Like, I don't know if, I always think, like, sacrifice is such, like, a big word without being too, like, nausea, because it's like, you make a choice, don't you? Like, yeah. I wouldn't say, part of me is like, oh yeah, I sacrificed going on the piss with my mates and doing this, but actually, you kind of chose not to because you knew in the long run it wasn't going to help you with rugby. I guess there are sacrifices along the way that you make, like, you can't go out on nights out, or you can't go to certain events, or you can't do this, but at the same time, everything's a choice and you choose not to do them because you know it's better for you. And also, like, I won't regret any of the choices I've made. Obviously, sometimes you make the wrong choice, which you learn about after. But I say sacrifice seems quite hard. Even like now, like, it's kind of like you go away, you know, in Sasha Rugby, you're away from family a long time, but it's a choice, isn't it? We don't have to go away. We choose to do it. So it's...
Whether you want to call it sacrifice, choice, or what, it doesn't... But yeah, I think that happens more, actually. The older you get with kids and everything like that, that's when that comes into play. And I think when you're younger, as Ben has asked here, you know, what do you sacrifice? Well, nothing. There's nothing. No, there's no part that I look at that wasn't worth not being out or doing, I think, when you're trying to achieve something. At 16, Coley, when we joined, you know, a lot of guys, a lot of our mates are still, you know, at school studying. They want to go to university. The time they go to university, or they go traveling. By that point, like, you know, we're fortunate. We're already established in terms of, like, within the first team at Leicester, and a lot of my mates from school, they were still at uni and everything like that. And by that point, you're on a different journey. Such a cheesy word, I don't want to use that.
Yeah, you're on a different path, though. You're a different trajectory, aren't you?
Yeah, just on a different path. You're just on a different path. And I think, like, so I don't look back and think like I sacrificed much. What I did was I was just committed to what I wanted to do. Like, I knew that I wanted to play rugby, so I was just really committed to it. So do it all again.
I will say, I think it's tougher in today's for growing up kids nowadays, because when I grew up, you had like Facebook and stuff, but you didn't have like Instagram. You weren't like, you know, people now post straight from a party and it's like, oh, awesome this party is. And it could be crap, but everyone thinks it's really good. If you're not there, you kind of think, oh, I'm missing out. Whereas like, A, I wasn't invited to the party in the first place, but B, you wouldn't know about it till afterwards and it'd be really good. But then you're like, well, I've missed it. I'm not really bothered.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I do think that's probably tough for kids today or people growing up today for that fear of like, I'm going to stay in and be boring and do the right thing because I'm playing tomorrow or day after. But I wanted to play rugby. I knew the benefits of getting a good night's sleep, and you get drilled into that pretty early that you just have to do. Because so we grew up in a fairly relentless academy and even first team. Like, if you didn't perform in training or you didn't do this, it was, right, you can piss off, basically. A bit school of hard knocksy, but it kind of taught you to... it's like recovery. Like, I'm going to rant here, but it's like recovery now. Is you and I grew up before, like, we had ice baths, but you didn't have sauna, massage, this. Well, that wasn't available to us 18-year-olds, so you kind of had to learn to... train day in, day out, perform. Oh, I think my hamstring's going to fall off. The coach doesn't care. You're training, you get on with it. And you found a way of doing it. And like, you realise that, oh, I can't be up playing games every night. You know, I can't be playing PlayStation every night till 3 a.m. I have to go to sleep at this time and wake up at this time because I've got to be in at 7 and I've got to be in the gym at 7. I've got to be working hard. So, and seem to be working hard and actually improving. So like, you learnt how to deal with that sort of physical demands of training. And it was tougher than it was now. Whereas I think that's probably what's played into our longevity is the fact that you kind of brought up in that school of hard knocks rather than going, oh, I need to do my recovery. I need to have a massage. I need to sauna. I need to ice. I need to do this. And 3 hours after you do a weight session and you recover in 3 hours. And then the next day it's like, I can't train. And I swear there's a correlation between, this is my theory on recovery, is the people who do the most recovery also do the least training because they turn up the next day and go, I'm not fully recovered. I can't train. Whereas a lot of us old school people, the less system is like, I don't care. You're training.
Yeah.
My Whoop says I'm 66% recovered. I don't care. You're training. And like, you better be good at training as well, because if you're not, someone's going to knee drop you. So, you know what I mean? You find a way of being good at training.
You're absolutely right, Coley. Like, from a young age, you just built up a tolerance and you're used to, oh, that hurt. It doesn't matter. Like, you just get on with it. You just train. Like, who plays when you feel 100% right? No one does, apart from some lads now. But you're right. Some lads just put so much emphasis in it. It is important. Of course it is. But there's a balance. Like, at the end of the day, we play a contact sport that takes its toll when you're out there every day training, pushing it before the weekend anyway. So you're going to go in a little bit sore and stuff like that. So yeah, hopefully we've sort of answered the sacrifice. The only thing I will just top up on the sacrifice is actually, it's actually the people around you that sacrifice the most.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, we get to do what we love, but it's actually your wife, your family, your parents at a young age that are driving you here, there and everywhere, Timbuktu and back again. They're the ones that actually, you know, you can't do it without them. So actually, ultimately, they're making the sacrifice. And you're doing something you love. So there we are. Right, we've got a question from Harry. What's the closest you've ever been to leaving Leicester?
Ooh, good question. There was one time when I was out of contract, maybe 2013, 2014. I think the club had signed, like, Kieran Brooks was there and Castro was there, and there, something said that I was looking to leave. But I sort of made contact with a couple of clubs, but because you're always in contract, you weren't allowed. It's kind of like, do you want to come? And then you're like, yes, and then Leicester would get wind of this and they'd sort of re-sign you. So it wasn't ever, I've never gone to another club and looked around. And I think with England as well, it's always been, you want to play in England and especially at Leicester. I wouldn't say, I've never been out the door. I've probably came within options that, like, oh, if Leicester don't want to re-sign me, I have to have options elsewhere. And then the club always used to get wind of this. Because the club always used a negotiating tactic, didn't they? Where it's like, I think I'm worth this. Well, no, we think you're worth half that. It's like, oh, well, what we're going to do? It's like, well, they let the market decide. Then you go out, find a bid from another club, and then they'll be like, so you are worth that. Here's your contract. It was like, why do we have to go through that process? But yeah, that's about as close as I've come. You?
Have I ever come close to leaving Leicester? Yes, I've definitely been. There's been periods where teams and clubs have come in for me. And at the end of the day, it's like anyone at work or anything like that. You know, if people come looking for you, you got leverage, you got things like that. Ultimately, it's about getting a deal that you would like and getting over the line. So sometimes that involves, like Coley, like you say, you know, you go to the club, they say, we think you're worth this. You go, no, I'm not. I'm worth X. Then you look at the market, turns out you are worth X. And then negotiations happen again. So I think there's probably a podcast in actually talking about how that works and everything like that. But in terms of leaving Leicester, like, yes, I've had the opportunity to, but neither of us never have. So there we go.
Perfect. This is a question from Emmy. Which player were you most nervous about before playing them?
I wouldn't say player. It's the teams that make you nervous, because you know that they're that good that if you're not good, they could embarrass you on the big stage. There's times where, you know, you're playing against the All Blacks, you know, during that period of like 2010 to 15, where they had that like unbelievable team. Like, they, if you played them and they were hot and you were a little bit off, they could run riot by and put 50 on you. So it's like, it's the team that make you nervous, not the individuals.
Nervous, I think mine's a bit different because I'm sort of competitors are tired, you go against Loosehead. So I've probably been most apprehensive. Like, I remember playing against some great scrimmages like Thomas Domingo of France and stuff. Like, you'd be a bit apprehensive. Like, you'd be like, he's really good. He's got a really good pack around him. How are you going to deal with it? And also, if it goes wrong, it could go badly. So yeah, not really nervous, but it's about one player. But you are probably feeds into your nervousness about how you're going to perform, how the team's going to perform. Can you do your job in the role? Are you going to let your teammates down? All that kind of stuff. That's probably manifested as, I would say.
Yeah.
Question from Greeny Pie. What's the best practical joke you've ever seen?
Best practical joke I've ever seen? I was involved in a fairly good practical joke a few Christmases ago. Greg Bateman was at the club. Anyway, I wanted to get rid of my Christmas tree. And so I rang up Bateman and I said, hey mate, what are you up to? Hoping that obviously he'd be out. And he said, oh, I'm out in London for the day. So I thought, excellent. And I said, yeah, no problems. I was just hoping you're out for a coffee. So I loaded up my Christmas tree in my car, drove to Bateman's house and flung it over the fence. I then went and proceeded to then go get my cousin's Christmas tree, shove that in the back of my car and then chuck that over the fence. I then told Matt Tamua, who lived up the road, like, mate, you got to jump on the back of this. Go chuck your tree over Bateman's fence. Now, Tamua was leaving at the end of the year, so he just chucked it over with all the baubles and lights still attached and slung it over the fence. And then we left it. So then the next day, we're going to training and Bateman comes in. He's like, oh my God, lads, you'll never guess what. And I said, oh, what? He goes, I let the dog out for a pee this morning. Look out, there's three Christmas trees in my garden. Like, there's three Christmas trees that have been lobbed over the fence. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Like, I was out for the day yesterday. Some youths have obviously been told to discard these trees. So I said, oh, bloody hell, mate. Like, that's bad. Sort of me and Samu were looking at each other. Anyway, so then I told a few other lads. I was like, lads, you're right. Bateman, like, chuck it over his fence. Like, do it. So then Fordy and Johnny May did it, but they were like, they like, felt like naughty schoolboys, didn't they, Colly? They were like pathetic with it.
Yeah, no, yeah, they were giggling away, but doing it in the pitch dark, weren't they? Like, trying not to be seen or anything. Like, instead of just like casually going and lobbing it over the fence, they're lobbing it over the wall. They're a proper like military operation around it.
Fear of being caught. So then, anyway, so they lobbed both theirs over, and then I can't remember, a couple of other lads did it. So then he came in the next day, and it was game day, actually. So we come in the change room and Bateman's bottom lip's dragging on the floor. And I said, are you right, Bateman? He goes, mate, honestly, there's like another five trees. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I said, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'll tell you what I've done. He said, I've dragged each tree into the middle of the...
There was like a green, wasn't there, in the middle of his like housing estate?
He's like, I've dragged every tree out into the middle of the green, and I've put a message on the group saying, I've had these trees dumped over my house. You need to control your children. If you're telling your kids they've got nothing better to do than chuck trees, and it's some, all the kids have ganged up and thought it was amusing, then you need to discipline your child. And he went on this like mad rant. I wish I could find it. I'll try and find it. Anyway, he did this like long message, and anyway, he was furious. I said, oh, you know, what a nightmare. And then that night he came back to mine, and we're having a few drinks, and my brother and sister-in-law were up, and my nephew, and Bateman was explaining to my sister and brother-in-law that, you know, this had happened this week, and, you know, he just doesn't get it. Like, he hasn't offended any neighbours. He's not, you know, who's parked in the right spot. And, like, I don't know who's taken a vendetta against him. And then my nephew went, oh, the Christmas tree. And Greg was like, yeah, yeah. And he was like, oh, that was Uncle Ben. And he looked at me, mate, and he was absolutely devastated. Anyway, needless to say, my nephew didn't get any presents that Christmas for dobbing his uncle in. But yes, Bateman was absolutely devastated, the fact that I had been the ringleader of it, and all the boys had jumped on it, and the fact that it wasn't. He'd put this embarrassing message on the group. Toys had come out the pram, and basically all his teammates had done a dirty on him. So there we are. That's a bit of a long-winded one answer for you, but there's a little practical joke.
Oh, mate, it's brilliant. I remember, say, it was like that first time you did it, and all the boys, like, literally in the change room, like, I wonder who's got it in for you, Bateman, just feeding the, yeah, fueling the fire. Like, God, have you reckon there's anyone in the village that hates you? Must be someone. Have you pissed anyone off, like, feeding his insecurity?
Oh, so good. Question from Stephen. Please, can we have the backstory to Dan's World Cup antics where he was chopping water?
I guess, and this is the story about my Stone Cold Steve Austin impression.
For a second there, I was bamboozled by what he was referring. I was thinking, like, what's he talking about?
It took me a second to work out. I think it is the Stone Cold Steve Austin video. Basically, the backstory is I always wear, and always have done, I don't wear undershorts. I wear, like, black pants, Y-fronts, you want to call them, whatever. We had a training session. I had, like, both elbows strapped up, but I think they were both strapped up in, like, black tape. I'd taken my rugby kit off, but I still had my black socks on. My elbows strapped up, and I had these pants on. And Howard Walters walked in to the change room. Was like, oh, Stone Cold. Like, it was so funny. We sort of just, I rolled with it a bit, thought, this is quite funny. But then he basically then proceeded. This was before the World Cup. Then we got to the World Cup, and I think he's like, some of the boys need a bit of a boost. Are you wearing your pants? And I was like, yeah, but I can't. Literally, we're playing Argentina or something like that. It was like, no, I can't, I can't. And so anyway, he's like, put it, okay, we'll do it at some point, do it at some point. I'm like, Alan, whatever. And then just thought, it was one, I don't think I was playing, it was one of the weeks in between. And Alan's just like, right, we're doing it. Boys need a lift, you're doing it. So I was like, oh, for fuck's sakes. And then you just got to commit to it, haven't you? If you know what I mean? Like, if someone makes you do something, if you say you're going to do it, you just got to commit to it. So that's why I did. And then it's obviously got filmed. I didn't think it was being filmed, but I think a couple of people filmed it. And then Marla put it out on Instagram, and it went wild.
You owned it, mate. You owned it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, I tried. The guys at the time were loving it, so that's the main thing. It boosted before the gym session. I was fucking soaked for the rest of the day. Like, my pants were soaked. Everything I was wearing was soaked. So I felt I really helped the team that week.
You helped the team prep. You brought a lot of morale. Awesome answer. Let's go to an ad break.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
And those were the ads.
A question from Reese. He wants to know, are refs just guessing at scrums?
No, Reese, they're not just guessing. I feel, having seen in the Six Nations what referees sometimes have to, they have checklists for like the scrum. And obviously they're not, the scrum is quite a complicated thing. even guys who've done it a long time will get it wrong. But referees, they get like a checklist of what to look for, and there is a lot on this checklist, going from like space, the hooker's break foot, the binding, where the binding arm is, where this is, where the hips are, the pitchers. So the referee's told to look for pitchers, easy cues, basically. So as props, we understand this, and we should be giving them, like, Lucas's got a high elbow and tight, he can't change his bind, he's got a long bind and stuff. But yeah, I do feel the referees are, the sort of process of the scrum and stuff should be sort of simplified. And that's probably where people, scrum coaches, players, have to sort of sit down and agree to a sort of like, because it's all about, in the Six Nations, about like, don't want loading through your head and your axle loading, and don't want, they want space and all, a gap on the crouch and a gap on the bind. So there's got to be some form of agreement where, a bit like a line out, for instance, where a referee will give like a defensive mark and then the attack can come in and have their own gap, is whether you do something like that on a scrum where you just go, look, defense, this is your mark, attack. Just simplify the process. Attack, you can decide how big the gap is, but if it's too small, you're getting penalised. Attack, if it's too big, you're getting penalised. So it's got to be just right. That takes care of that. Breakfoots, I'm not really bothered about. If team leans too much, there's loads of things, I think, cues that you could help referees and make it a bit more simple. I may have probably made it sound more complicated. I think, you know, as scrums, we need to be better and say we think we should help referees, because as you find at international level, there are less scrums, but they become so much more important. And I think referees kind of understand that and don't want to get decisions wrong, but they have to make a decision because they've been told to make decisions. So you want to give them the best chance they can. And for the good of the game as well, because say we had that point in the Six Nations where everyone's like, oh, scrums are too long, they're rubbish, they could have a stop clock on them, I'm going to do this, is this, and it's like, you lose the scrum. I think, and I'm going to say this obviously because it's my job, but you lose the scrum, you kind of lose the essence of the game. So the game has to evolve, and we all have to do a better job with the scrum.
Lovely answer. Lovely answer. Question from T. Armstrong. Does Coley still wear Converse high tops to the gym?
No, I do not still wear Converse high tops to the gym. I can only think, Mr. T. Armstrong, you were in the academy with me. Why would I have worn Converse high tops in the gym? I've either forgotten my trainers, because I used to wear Converse high tops because I'm cool, or it was probably going for a phase where, the old powerlifting phase, where it's like, you know, powerlifters wear, if you don't have Olympic weightlifting shoes, which you don't when you're 16 and poor, it's like, oh yeah, get some Converse, we're deadlifting those, and that's what the powerlifters wear. So that's the only thing I can think of. I'm glad he remembers, and I'm glad the memory I've left him is me wearing Converse high tops in the gym.
Nice thought that.
Yeah.
Question from Treacher. If England selection wasn't an issue, what overseas clubs would you most want to play for? That's a great question.
It is.
So, where you going?
Growing up, I always used to love, like, the French teams, and I'd either say Paris, as in, like, when I was growing up, it was Stade, were good, because they had, like, the French front row at the time, which was, like, Marconnet and de Villiers and Sarveski. So I used to love them, but then I'd also probably go Clermont, having played in Clermont. I know they're not the sort of team they were, but there's a period in Europe when they were phenomenal. Going there, the atmosphere is brilliant. I know it's not probably the greatest place in terms of, and there's no beach or anything like that, but I just remember, like, having loved to have played for that kind of French team. And yeah, Clermont Auvergne is the one I'd love to have played for if England wasn't a problem.
I mean, I'd love to have gone to somewhere like Toulouse, although the question is, played for, I wouldn't have played much due to Anton Dupont, but it would have been a great place to play the odd 10-minute cameo. And the way they play rugby. I wouldn't have mind a stint in Australia, to be honest with you. Great place to live, family and all that. So that would definitely be up there. So I'd go Western Force, Perth. I really like Perth. So Western Force, or we'll go to Toulouse. That would have been two little nice little stints.
Yeah, it's a different question. It's like, do you go for the rugby? In which case, you're probably going to try to go to like a successful team that you could be part of and learn from, like a Toulouse. Or you go for, like, do I go for the lifestyle, which, and then you're looking at Southern Hemisphere and even Japan.
Yep.
Just totally different. But yeah, no, I'd, even like Toulon, like playing in one of those Toulon when he had like Wilkinson and Gitto and Botha. I mean, Carl Amon was there, so I wouldn't have played again. But like playing in one of those teams.
If you're talking about eras, then yeah, that would definitely be in there. Or you go for like the Toulouse now, which play unbelievable rugby, for sure.
Question from Stuart. Ben, who's been the most mouthy opposition scrum half you've faced? It's probably more directed at the referee. I know there's a couple of scrum halves and stuff that will, they communicate through the game or they commentate on the game, but they sort of will give the referee an earful when they can. It's not really to and fro between players, is it?
No, and like with the ref, it's like you just be like, at scrum time, for instance, you might say to your team, lads, can we clean out the breakdown a little bit better? But I know that they're in the way and they're not rolling away, but just keep trying to move them. So you can like drop things in like that, which essentially I'm not speaking to the ref there. I'm speaking to my own teammates, but I am completely directing it at the referee. Or, lads, hold your depth. I know that they're probably offside, but just give ourselves a bit more time on the ball because it doesn't seem to be being picked up at the moment. You might just say things that are like, but like in terms of like actually like halfbacks, Melvin, like you say, it doesn't happen, Collie, but what you might talk and sort of, like I say, try and influence the game a little bit or do things like that. But you certainly don't, like you said, you don't target certain people. Like you just don't, it just doesn't happen.
Occasionally you say you'll hear stuff. I remember, I can't remember playing, but it was like front of a line out and they're like, oh, there's just nine. And he was giving Charlie Clare at Leicester abuse. He's like, oh, you're second choice. You know, you can't throw. And everyone's like, mate, well, you're third choice and you're shit. So shut the fuck up. At that point, they have a decision to make where it's like, oh, no, you can't throw. And it's like, give it a rest, mate. And it kind of like fizzles out.
I think if you're gonna give it chat, like you've got to back it up. You've got to be really, really good.
You've either got to be one that bloke where you give chat and you've got to be really good, or you know your role is literally just to annoy people.
Yeah.
That you're not very good at rugby,
yeah,
but you'll give loads of chat. You know, you've got to do the role where you know you're not very good and you just go around and distracting players, which is also a good role.
But it's a game for everyone, Coley. It's a game for everyone, as they always say. We've got a question from Josh. Which player tried to get out of training and warm-ups the most?
Ooh. Well, Josh,
I've seen some lads over the years really try and get out of fitness sessions. My back's tight. My hammy's tight. Got a headache. Don't feel right.
I'd say there are a lot of wingers out there will kind of go, if they're not playing in the team, they go, oh, I'm a bit neural, actually. So they wouldn't train or they wouldn't have to do certain things because wingers are prized possessions, put it that way, Ferraris. So if they're not playing or they're feeling a bit sad, they'll go, oh, I'm neural. I can't use my hamstrings don't work. I better not train. And then everyone panders to them because they're these elite athletes. So I'd say I'm not going to name names, but I can think of a couple for England's World Cup squad. But yeah, warm-ups. There have been times when I've tried to get out of like the pre-game warm-up because sometimes the warm-up is harder than the game.
Yeah.
Especially if you're on the bench. If you're on the bench, mate, honest to God, it's like you warm up, it's like, okay, we're going to warm up at 14 minutes, 28 minutes. And there was one point, I remember doing like lengths of Matty Olywood's Welford Road or like Twickenham where you're literally like sprinting from 15 to 15. You'll do like high-speed meters and you're like, I don't think I can warm up and play the game. I could warm up or play the game, but I'm literally doing these high-speed meters. Then I'm going to sit down for 15 minutes, come back out, do more. I'm just going to roll around on my back and do the old hip flexor stretch, the universal hip flexor stretch, which means I'm warming up, but I'm not warming up. And then I'll get me on the game and let me play. But, oh, yeah, the warm-up when you're on the bench is, I reckon, the worst warm-up going. And I would happily get out of that every time.
It's awful, isn't it? You can't... But even the pre-game warm-up, like you say, is tough enough. Because sometimes you're blown. You think, oh my God, how am I going to play a game? Like, I'm absolutely dying. I've done nothing different in my routine. I'm absolutely gasping. But when you're on the bench and you sit there and you kind of just sort of nestle in, don't you? Start watching the game. Like, right, go warm up. And you're doing like shuttles. And again, you're absolutely blowing.
Are you doing like down-ups? It's like down up on the try line. Back pedal back, sprint through to 22. And you're like, well, I can't. It's like, just do it. And you're like, right. And you end up like... Honestly, it's harder than a game sometimes.
It's minging. Yeah, there is a certain player that he would train very, very hard and he was extremely professional. But in certain times in the session, he would basically just go, Ferrari's going in the garage and just go take himself to the side. And actually the coach at the time actually loved that. He'd be like, is the Ferrari going in the garage? And he's like, yeah, the Ferrari's in the garage. Good. And that was... But we never had that luxury, Coley.
The only thing I'd say is as you get older, training-wise, you can be a bit more the old tactical swap out, where it's like, yeah, I'll do the first couple of reps in this drill, and then, I'm just going to swap out and stay swapped out till the very end. So it's that kind of like, I can't do this drill. So you do a bit of that, but that's about all you get, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's the episode. Thank you for all your questions. It's been brilliant. Loved answering them. Keep them coming in. Even if we do go on a bit of a tangent, there's some really probing questions we've answered. So keep them coming in. Go find us on Instagram and TikTok. Search For The Love Of Rugby.
If you are listening on Apple or Spotify, hit the follow button.
If you want another podcast to listen to, go and find Oceans, Life Underwater. It'll make you feel like you're at the bottom of the sea and make you love the world around you. Go and search for Oceans, Life Underwater.
If you want to listen to our podcast ad-free, go to Amazon Music. Or if you're on Apple, just subscribe for £1 a week. We'll be back on Monday. See you then. Sports Social Podcast Network.